Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. This week, the FBI getting your BitLocker keys. Hope you didn't have anything secret on there. I'm sure you did. Open source supply chains are under attack. Cybercrime, of course, also under attack as the Cybercrime Alliance hits 100 plus global organizations. U.S. seizes the ramp Cybercrime Forum and TikTok expands its U.S. data surveillance operation. All that and more this week on Access of Easy.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Lem, what's going on, buddy? Good to see you back Thursday night. What's the good word over in your neck of the woods?
Cold, man. Very cold. How about you?
Yeah, it is actually. No, it is. I actually was outside a little while ago. We had, I've been sick all week. I was sick last week. I've been sick this week. My in-law's dog has been here. He just left an hour or two ago with my brother-in-law girlfriend. They're going to take him for the next week while my in-laws are in, Aruba or something. I don't know where they went. Somewhere nice. Not cold there, but cold here. Those cold days, buddy, way worse when you got two dogs to deal with, I'll tell you.
It doesn't get easier when you get warmer. That's so I yeah. There'll be a point in time where I will say goodbye to the cold forever. And I'll never look back fondly at those days. Always look forward, never backwards.
That's right. That's right. We'll start as always with last week's quote of the week. Like liberty, gold that never stays where it is undervalued. That was from J.S. Merrill, a speech to the U.S. Senate, Len, in 1878, and no one got the answer correct. So this week's quote: get action, seize the moment. Man was never intended to become an oyster. That sounds like it's from some kind of Rolling Stones song or something. If you know who it was by, put in the comments. You can only look at your His Master's Voice receipt from 1996 when you picked up the Beastie Boys album, but nowhere else. No Googling, no searching, no nothing. And if you get the answer right first, you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. They'll pay for it. So, BitLocker and Microsoft and the Microsoft off 13% today, thanks to a negative earnings report. But I'm sure this is not at all related to the price action, though it should be if people were paying attention, you know.
Morgan Stanley gave him the middle finger today.
I saw like that. Yeah, it took him off the preferred list. Interesting. Very interesting.
How could they not be the preferred list? Everybody uses Microsoft products if you're working in an enterprise environment. So, yeah. Whatever. You use any Microsoft products in a personal?
I mean, this computer that I'm using has Windows on it, but I am transitioning slowly to Mac for some other stuff. Just because I think it's going to be a little easier to do some work on that. But Windows still, you know, I know it's, especially for this audience, not a positive, but it's still my go-to. I got to be honest. Still my go-to.
One day you'll kick the bucket or kick that into the bucket and say,
one day I'll kick the bucket too. Oh, I'll kick the bucket.
Because, you know, a lot of people use it for gaming, but gaming, Linux is taking a huge chunk, huge bite out of Microsoft. From Linux gaming has come a long way.
I just saw that NVIDIA's GeForce cards will work on Linux PCs now, which is very interesting.
They haven't before?
No, I think today was the first time it was announced, so I'm not sure. Maybe they were using Ryzen cards before, but AMD and now the GeForce cards. Anyway, not related to the story, but
yeah. Let's talk about Microsoft and their BitLocker keys. What's going on? It's just this Guam fraud case, and Forbes was the one that made us all aware of this last week. And Forbes' article said that Microsoft gave FBI keys to unlock encrypted data. And so what this does with the FBI asking Microsoft for encrypted data, or at least getting access to encrypted data, there's a loophole here. Like, if Microsoft has the BitLocker recovery keys and that's used for encrypting data, like laptops, the drives and the data for the laptops, well, you could get access to the laptop if you get it. So in this case, there was a fraud investigation in Guam, and BitLocker was used to encrypt the laptop, the hard drive. And BitLocker is, you know, part of the Microsoft suite of programs. But Windows, they allow users to do one particular thing with the recovery keys. And what is that? It's an oddity. It gives the user the ability to back that key up on the cloud service and the Microsoft cloud service at that. And they are the ones that manage it. And since they manage it, they have 100% access to those recovery keys. All this requires is then the police to come to them or the courts and say, look, we need access to this. And here's the reason why. They get a court order and away they go. And Microsoft, they have to comply. So they have the recovery key. They're going to give it up. And then, well, the courts could then take action, unencrypt whatever data you have and take a look at everything you have. So in the past, Microsoft, it's not like it's a one-off. They receive almost 24 last year requests for getting these BitLocker keys.
It's probably way more than that too. I don't believe that number for a second.
And all of them are not fulfilled. There's reason why these requests aren't fulfilled is because some users choose not to back it up on a cloud server. Good for them. But why do people do this? It's for convenience. That's what Microsoft even is saying. The only reason people do this is for when something is convenient, you're going to get rugged in the process. So you never store anything on a cloud-based server if you think that whatever you're storing is sensitive data, because if you're storing it, it's no longer you're storing it. Somebody else has access to it. What I recommend, if you are going to use some sort of cloud-based server to store anything, encrypt the data. Use some very high-level encryption, and that way it's going to be very challenging to open that particular software up. And they could do it with enough time and effort, but who's going to dedicate that time and effort in order to unencrypt one piece of data? And so that's what I would suggest you do. But with respect to this, people are just idiots. If they think they're just going to have an encrypted drive and store the key on Microsoft, you might as well just open the thing wide open, because that's what it is. It's a wide open door. So too bad for that. This is an education for people out there. Don't trust the cloud with keys for encrypted data. It does not make sense.
Totally agree. I'm going to read you a blurb here from TechCrunch about the Windows 11 default configurations. Windows 11 has been a topic on the show, and you know it's a topic all over the PC world for just poor performance. But here's another example of, you know, sort of Microsoft's fall from grace. Windows 11's default configuration automatically links BitLocker encryption keys to users' Microsoft accounts and backs them up to the cloud servers. You mentioned that. This design decision prioritizes convenience over privacy. If a user forgets their BitLocker password, they can simply log into their Microsoft account to recover the key. So in the Guam case, when the FBI serves Microsoft the warrant looking for the recovery keys for three laptops linked to this Carissa Tenorio's account, all they need is for Microsoft to comply. It may as well be plain text. There's no way that Microsoft can say no. This is different than a few other providers, by the way. Apple uses end-to-end encryption with keys stored on user devices only. And so Apple can't decrypt your data even if they're compelled. Meta stores encryption keys in the cloud but uses zero-knowledge encryption architecture. So Meta can't get at unencrypted keys even if legally compelled. Microsoft does, obviously, this thing we just discussed, a disaster. And then Google offers nothing in terms of true end-to-end encryption for Drive or Workspace, but they do have an advanced protection program for some users, if you ask. So what do we make of this? This is another example of trading convenience for privacy and convenience for secrecy and convenience for functionality. BitLocker is neither encrypted nor a locker on the Microsoft side. It's just a thing to stop who exactly from accessing your data. Your kids, your wife, your girlfriend, I don't know. Like it's not to stop Microsoft from seeing it, that's for sure. It's not to hide it from anyone who compels them. So to me, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, why would you ever use this service? Especially because there are other options, right? Like there's other sort of private key options and encrypted key options. Like I think Bitwarden is one that's pretty good or widely regarded as good. There's another one in Bitcoin that people talk about that they like, you know, that I would not recommend for Bitcoin keys, but for like, I don't know, other stuff, sure. Like if you're going to use a service like this, the Microsoft suite now is basically all convenience. Like I'll let you in on a little secret here. If I want to use if I want to figure out a password to a website and I can't figure it out, Len, and Microsoft knows it but won't tell me what it is, you know, all I have to do is type in my PIN number for my PC and it'll tell me the password for the website.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So if you know how to log into my computer, but you don't know a password for a certain website, the Microsoft, you know, the Windows 11 prompt will come up and just say like, hey, if you know the passkey, we'll get you through here. Interesting. Okay. If I want to sign into a Google account that's signed out, right? Passkey, do it. No problem. And it's like, I get why you would have a passkey on like my iPhone. Like my iPhone is a passkey, but why does my Windows PC need one? Why? Like this is a part of a broader conversation about information security and the number of people now who are exposing themselves because of the number of passwords they need and requirements for encryption in some cases. Like you mentioned, enterprise environments, you're going to have to be using this, which by the way is a huge issue. If this is something you can get through, you know, compelling a law enforcement agency, then I don't know. It seems to me that people are not ready for this level of data security expectation, to say the least.
Linux does it, at least my version of Debian. I'm not sure if this is unique or this is across the board, but when I start up my computer, I got to enter a password.
Yeah.
And that password unlocks my drive. Without that password, it gives me an error. It says, I forget the exact, but that's
the way the drive remains encrypted. You can't boot.
Correct. So yeah, all the data is encrypted. And so without that password, it's impossible to get in. And then even if you do get in with the password, like it's a pain to get in furthermore, but still that just works. I mean, it's a system that for me, it works fine.
And they don't want the average retail person crippling their access by forgetting a password, right? That's the other problem. It's like, again, we've talked so many times about how everything is geared toward the lowest common denominator. And I hate to say it, but the lowest common denominator has never been lower and it's getting lower by the year, it feels like. So naturally the quality of the products available to retail are going to go down, 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 down. And this is what you're going to see, right? Now, I'm not saying this person, you know, should be protected, but, you know, fraud is fraud. But there should be a level of security that they are guaranteed, and they would have been guaranteed if they do some of those other services I mentioned, but they chose Microsoft's BitLocker instead. So lesson learned, I guess.
All right, let's talk about the open source ecosystem, because they're facing a structural risk because there was a huge spike in bad actors doing stuff over there. 454,000 new malicious packages were found in the last year alone. And these have evolved. They were from these spam and stunts. Now they're into industrialized campaigns. And the people responsible behind this, very powerful, the organizations, because it looks like some of them could be state-sponsored. And when we're talking state-sponsored, we know who we're talking about. new Friends of Canada, perhaps. And some of these campaigns use social and technical mimicry. That's like typo squatting, where you use a name that is similar to a popular package and do some brand jacking. And that's trying to trick developers into working under tight deadlines. And what they're trying to do is automatically of stealing the API keys and AWS credentials upon installation. And AI coding assistants, they're also, this is interesting, they're accidentally recommending non-existent packages, which attackers then create and weaponize. And so, for example, we had the Shai Hulud campaign not too long ago, and they used automated scripts to flood the NPM registry with a bunch of malicious packages in just a matter of days. And it makes for that manual reviews pretty much impossible just because of the enormity of the packages. And so they're targeting high-profile package maintainers through account takeovers. And so once they're able to hijack it, a trusted package with millions of downloads, it could be easily distributed amongst a massive user base. And they say that 55 to 56% of all open source malware is now designed for stealing data. And they're using it as a way for stealing environment variables, developer credentials, and so forth. And how they're developing this, of course, is with LLMs. That's used to help to generate the code. And this is something that's becoming more and more prevalent these days. Just because it's open source doesn't mean that it's free from any sort of bugs or malicious activity. People still need to examine the code, make sure that it's free of any bugs or potentially stealing data. But given that as software gets more and more bloated over time, it's more challenging to do this. So just because it's open source, it's not just a free, it's perfect, it works great. You still got to be careful, whatever you install. If you use a particular piece of software that may be a couple of versions older, still maintained, but a couple of versions older, that's what I suggest people do. Try not to be on the bleeding edge. Try to use something that is deemed to be stable and still maintained. That's the way to go.
Open source is an interesting animal, right? Because there are so many benefits to having code review and sort of continued iterating on software that leaves you oftentimes with less technical deficit and technical debt than you would see in a product like Windows, for example. But here's my question for you. Are we at the point now where open source software has become too big a target for the average person to risk using on their like go-to flagship PC?
Depends how anybody uses any particular piece of software, regardless if it's closed or open source. Mm. No, open source shouldn't be out of the reach of anybody to want to use, because, well, if you have good privacy practices, it's going to bleed over into whatever you use, be it Windows, Linux, whatever.
I'm not so sure anymore. Like Linux especially is interesting. It's an interesting case, right? Because Linux has so many different, I think the term Linux uses is flavors, right? I think.
Yeah, right? Distros.
Yeah. Okay, so you got like Debian, Ubuntu, you know, Mint, whatever. There's a million of these things.
They're all those three the same. Just FYI, look, Debian is like the root, and then a lot of them are from that. Arch is another one that's the root, and a lot of them come from that. So you only have a few of the roots, and a lot of them are just flavors of.
So let's say if the Debian root is ill maintained or targeted, you know, does that not affect all the branches of that tree?
Potentially. Absolutely.
Like that's what I mean, right? Like, you know, that's a big project and it has a lot of eyes on it. And I got to imagine that's a target. So
Debian is a very old, so they use older software, older drivers, it's supposed to be the way I described it, using an older maintained piece of software. That's Debian. It's not cutting edge, bleeding edge, or even new. It's always a little bit behind. If you get a new laptop and install Debian, oftentimes you'll find stuff just won't work. Mm. And you have to find workarounds for that, just because they want it to maintain stability and speed rather than using newer pieces of hardware. That's Debian. That's the mentality of that. They want to just make it work, period. Mm. So yeah, the newer ones will, like the Ubuntu's and Mint and stuff, they'll be more inclined to have newer drivers and stuff.
Yeah,
that's not bad. It's just that's what they choose to do.
I think there's a moment coming here where, like, here's another question, right, about the open source projects. We'll stick with Linux for now because you're most familiar with that. You know, who decides who gets to add, like who decides who gets to merge into that GitHub project?
There's a community similar to like Bitcoin has.
Yeah.
And it's 100% community driven for Debian.
And so, the reason I asked that is because, you know, we're kind of seeing problems in Bitcoin, you know, because that community has gone astray in a lot of ways, I think, you think as well. And so what's stopping, like Bitcoin is one thing, Linux is one thing. Like, how do you stop this from happening over time? And is it even worth trying to stop? Is it true that you should be trying to stop it, or can you just stop upgrading? Maybe is that the answer, or fork or whatever, right? Like there's so many different outcomes here, and all of them, it seems to me, are issues with the open source structure as it grows to the point where it becomes a target. And then once it gets to become a target, you basically have to close the project a little bit to protect it. Like that's sort of what I'm getting at here. And I don't know if that's going to continue with, you know, as you mentioned, AI is an accelerant for all this, but not the only driving force. So I don't know if that's a rational concern or what, but it seems to me like the bigger these projects get, the more they go from open source to sort of open source to, if you know someone working on the project, you can contribute open source, et cetera, and down the line.
Well, if remember we had the compression utility in Linux that was compromised. That was pretty big about a year.
Yeah, a while ago. Yeah, yeah.
So, like I say, just because it's open source doesn't mean it's free from having any attacks. But then also because it's open source, you potentially have more eyes looking at it, and that may be able to provide any bug fixes, right? Because everybody's able to look at the code. See, it's a double-edged sword, because not only could attackers look at it, but also people that are maintaining could also look at it as well.
Hmm.
So it's there's no perfect system. Just choose what you want. Have good security, sorry, good privacy hygiene, and away you go.
Okay. Because
if not, you're gonna get wrecked. So yeah, Shiny Hunters.
Yeah, our guys, they're back.
Yeah, well, see, these are money-hungry cyber crime group. And they've shifted its focus towards something called phishing. It's a voice phishing and real-time social engineering. And that's to bypass the SSO. That's a single sign-on and the MFAs. And so those protections, they're trying to bypass that. So in the past, they did a lot of mass theft from the GitHub repositories and unsecured clouds. But the group, you know, these guys, they've been operating under a super group known as the Scattered Lapsus.
Lapsus. Yeah.
Well, so their tactics, they change. Now they're going into the high valued enterprise cloud environments like Salesforce, Snowflake, and so forth. And recent operations involved real time attack chains, and the attackers typically call up employees with the phishing, as I talked about. They're trying to impersonate IT support or unauthorized personnel. And when they're doing these calls, they tell the people to spoof the SSO login page. They log into that and they trick them to entering in a particular device code. And in the case of Salesforce, they were able to manipulate users into giving them access to quote-unquote connected apps, sorry, and that granted them, these attackers, API-level access and OAuth tokens. And what they were able to do with this, they were able to steal a ton of data. And over the last little while, over the past few years, they've been pretty active. Ticketmaster, Live Nation, they got nabbed allegedly 560 million records, including some credit card information was stolen. AT&T metadata, 50 billion worth of call data and texts. So really this boils down to people need to either be trained better to not be spoofed or to not be tricked into this. Or there's another thing. Maybe employees just don't give a crap, right? Maybe they're just, if you think about it, if they're in an environment that there's no upward mobility, they're not getting paid a lot, they're being treated like just robots.
They're in another country, they might not speak the language that well. Like there's a million different reasons why this would go, you know, against them.
But you think about it, like if you're in a position that you're just not happy and you know, there's an opportunity to screw over the company, that could be a potential. They could say, yeah, go ahead, and they'll open up the doors and let attackers come in and they don't care. So that's another thing. It's not just the training aspect and making sure people are aware to try to deflect these attacks. But also I have a thing that there's even a small little bit of just employees just pissed off and they just don't give a crap about this.
I think that's true. I think that's actually the unspoken big piece of the story is that we continue to outsource security to the weakest link in every chain, right? So whether it's BitLocker or customer service at Bell or Rogers, right? Or the Robellus customer service team in India or any number of other operations, Amazon's another good one. You know, these people are, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to destroy them on the show because I don't know these people and God knows they've lived a difficult life in some of these places. But the fact of the matter is they're just not cut out for modern scam environments. And so you have these opportunities showing up and live phishing sounds like something that's pretty, you know, pretty difficult to execute, but if it's executed well, it's hard to stop. And that's a problem. And you have this sort of, you know, conglomerate of talents here working together on this, and they seem to be doing a decent job at it. So some other places this has happened too, like Canva, SoundCloud, Panera. Like Panera, why are you going to Panera? I don't know, but it's interesting to think about the ways that this is going to continue. You know what I'm surprised we haven't seen a lot of yet is voice impersonation 2FA breaks. Because I don't know if I told you this. I have I don't know what you call it. It's like a workflow app, Comfy, on this PC that does local AI work. So you can do image gen and audio fixing and stuff like that on like local devices. So no API token, no anything, right? Just let your graphics card do the work. And you can clone a voice with like 7 seconds of audio. So that 7 seconds of audio will let you have that voice say anything. And it's, you know, I got to tell you, Len, it ain't bad. So you have something like this going after MFA. Then you have the voices. What is left to grab? We've all seen the videos of, you know, the overweight Midwestern guy in front of his camera looking like an Instagram model, right? Like what's left? What is left? I'm not sure. The answer is nothing on the internet is safe. If it's connected to the internet, if it's behind MFA that requires someone else be a gate for you, you're in trouble, man. You are in trouble because eventually those calls are going to get to the right person. They're not going to know what to do. They're going to be, you know, hungover or tired, or, you know, their kids are giving them a hard time, or it's loud in the call center. They're about to go for lunch. They just want to get off the phone and you're toast. That's all it takes.
You heard about the RAMP, the Russian Anonymous Marketplace.
I like the name. Don't you? Like RAMP. We haven't had a good name like that in a while. RAMP is good. Now, I don't know if the Russians know that RAMP is a good name because it's not a Russian word, but maybe. I don't know.
I think they're aware that it is an English word. So anyways, the FBI, they seized the RAMP Cybercrime Forum. And that was a place where people were selling the ransomware as attack services.
Did you see the tagline for the website?
Yeah.
The only place ransomware allowed.
Did you go on their ClearNet website, by the way?
No, I didn't.
It's pretty funny.
Is it?
So it's ramp4u.io.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it just shows that the
CSIS agent assigned to your computer is just, his phone is buzzing right now. He's looking at your screen. You see what Len goes to next.
It's great stuff. Anyways, so this website was taken down. Not only was the ClearNet website that I just mentioned taken down, but also the Onion website is now gone. Well, they're there, but they've been replaced by the FBI, you know, the stuff sitting there. And yeah, so this is now gone. The current, well, the former administrator of the board or the website, Stallman. And well, he confirmed that the takedown is gone because he went on another platform, XSS Forum. And he said that years of work have been destroyed. And he was stating that there's no plans to rebuild the platform. And this might seem like a win, right? The FBI is thinking that this is a good thing. It's not going to stop any. These people will just migrate to something else. And already there are major groups, they say they're already moving to something called Rehub, and or they're going to other things like encrypted messaging apps. So it's really not going to stop them. And the only good thing that they got out of this is probably the stuff on the back end, all the data, the private messages, the IP addresses, the financial transaction logs, all that stuff. But the rest, just taking down the website, it's just more, if anything, a nuisance. They'll migrate somewhere else and find a new place to set up shop. But it's just the information that they took. That's probably going to be damning information. But in the end, if they're in Russia, what are you going to do? You're going to try to bring them to the United States for trial? Good luck.
Add it to the Ukraine-Russia bargaining table there. See if you can't get the RAMP boys in front of a jury trial as part of the ceasefire. You know what's funny to me? How does this stuff exist for this long when it can be seized by the FBI? How's that possible?
Good question.
How does it stay up for this long? I mean, you obviously, they knew about this for some time. You know, they're dealing with the attacks. They're getting the reports. They're hearing about this stuff. They have a clear adversary in Russia. So it's not like there's any diplomatic considerations. And it's up for 5 years. July 21 was the founding date. So it's up for 5 years. They just are going nuts selling ransomware as a service. Not bad, man. Not bad if you can do it. $250K US in revenue every year. That ain't bad. You know, that's an all right job if you can get it. But they just leave it up, I guess. Is it possible they're like watching and learning from these guys before they take them down? I really have no idea. I tried to figure out why they would leave something like this up, and there's just nothing as far as explanations that really you could sell me as a rational, you know, reason to leave this thing running.
If you do a who is on that website, I said,
yeah,
I got so much information is redacted.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at it right now. It's just incredible. The only thing I see that's more interesting than not is they have the two name servers and both are the fbi.seized.gov.
Nice.
Funny stuff. Well, let's transition to the last story, the TikTok. Finally they closed this deal. Last is like a last minute thing, and they transferred its US operations to a new company. That's the TikTok, USDS Joint Venture LLC. And by doing so, there was a potential ban coming up. And so just before the ban was going to come into place, this deal was done. And the agreement, it has the backing of both the President of the United States and also the Chinese government. Imagine you have both of those entities agreeing on something. That's why it's so cold outside right now.
Yeah.
The deal gives the company ByteDance, and they're going to have 19.9% ownership of this, and a consortium of American companies are going to get the remaining 80.1%, and the majority is going to be Oracle, Silver Lake, and MGX, each holding 15%.
MGX is out of Abu Dhabi, by the way.
I know, Abu Dhabi-based MGX. Yeah. And Michael Dell's family is also going to, or Michael Dell's family office, sorry, is also going to get a little bit. There's also other investors, and that's one of them. And so what's interesting here is the data is now going to be stored exclusively. The US user data is going to be stored exclusively on Oracle US cloud environments. And also the algorithm is going to be retrained, and it's also going to be hosted on Oracle infrastructure. And what this is intended to do is to stop foreign manipulation. And there's about 200 million people in the United States that are using TikTok. And imagine if you had somebody wanting to send a particular message during an election, for instance, you can at least sway a few of those people, and that could be enough to change the results of an election. And so, okay, this is good. No longer China has this data, but now you have somebody else holding the data, and it's going to be Oracle in US soil. So it's, you know, you're just dealing with the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. And is that a good thing?
There's worse stuff here, right? Like the new joint venture, this is from my notes here, immediately expands data collection capabilities in ways that the ByteDance controlled version prohibited. So one is precise location tracking. The updated privacy policy permits the collection of GPS level data, which was previously limited to the approximate location via IP address and SIM. This feature is optional and defaults to off, represents a significant expansion of collection capability and AI interaction tracking. TikTok can now collect data on user prompts, questions, and metadata about AI tool interactions within the app, matching data collection practices in Europe's nearby feed feature. It takes away some of the algorithm power from ByteDance, but puts it into the hands of the United States. And, yes, you know, you said it, right? You know, the devil you know against the devil you don't. But I really think the American government and Oracle specifically, these are devils you actually don't know, because they've never had this kind of power that's quote unquote arm's length. We've talked a lot in the past about why you don't want arm's length corporations, companies, institutions, agencies, whatever, owning private companies or influencing private companies. And the reason is deputization. If the US government can deputize TikTok during an election, during a war — there's a war coming up probably between America and at least one other country I won't name, but you know, a couple of countries are on the list. And if you want to stir up support for that war, well, you don't do it with commercials now. You do it with TikTok reels. And so, like, I think there's a lot in this story that's not being mentioned. I suppose it's up to us to offer opinions on the facts, but this is to me, the next generation of government propaganda coming down the pipeline here. Ellison is a known kind of, you know, government guy. We were all waiting for him to buy Bitcoin years ago over at Oracle. Looks great for 80 something years old, by the way. God knows he's doing some kind of voice training and probably on all sorts of nanobot blood spinning treatments, whatever the hell he's got going on. But I don't trust any of these people. I don't trust that America and China got into bed on this deal either. That's a whole other thing that you mentioned there. You know, the dragon and the eagle do not make good bedfellows. And it's weird that on this major thing, ByteDance kept 20% of the company. Like, that's very, very strange. And they gave up so much in the deal too. Allegedly, they allegedly gave it up. Who knows what they actually gave up, right? No one knows what's going on the back end of these things, you know, in their entirety. Otherwise, if everyone knew what was going on the back end all the time, we'd never have a show. But every week we come here with a surprise for you guys. And this is going to be another one, I bet, down the road.
Oracle's been at this for a while. They've been wanting to get TikTok.
Yeah, three, four years now.
I don't know what's their fascination with this.
What do you mean you don't know? What's not to know?
Clearly, it's all the data.
Dude.
But that should be a red flag. The fact that they've been trying at this for some time and they've must have been lobbying hard so they could get support from both the White House, but also Congress and the Senate.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to this. That's just scary. TikTok is, you know, if you're using it as a user, that's horrendous.
It's crazy. You know, yeah.
Yeah. But hey. Do what you want. Your time.
Yeah, exactly. That's it for this week, everybody. Appreciate all the new subs, new viewers. We're trying our best every week to bring you something of interest in the realm of data breach and overreach in. So hopefully you come back next week. We'll have more. In the meantime, go to accessofeasy.com, read the rest of the stories, subscribe to the newsletter. Of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. And if podcasts are more your speed, Access of Easy, all one word, on all the podcatchers, you will find us. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
Take care.